Connor, you there?
I am, Jake. How's
okay,
it going?
Good. Sorry, I'm figuring out these buttons still, even though I've been here a year. So today, Connor, you know, I saw this thing about the church losing. I mean, is this the first you've heard of this?
So for anyone who's just tuned in, I'll give a quick summary of what you referenced and then begin. There's, you know, this article, this opinion piece came out recently. Then there was a Reuters article claiming that, you know, that there's almost this apocalyptic exodus from the Mormon church. The people are just apostatizing left and right and having all these intellectual, you know, struggles, and that people are leaving the church in droves. This is totally hyped. I mean, there's no statistics behind it at all. It's all anecdotal evidence. You know, one person had a church leader that they were there at a university course, and he was speaking frankly about this, and they took many of his comments out of context. And so I want to boil this back down to kind of what the core arguments are and then relate it to politics, because I think this has kind of an underlying issue that applies not just to religion, let alone the Mormon religion, but to politics generally, which I think is an important distinction or a connection to make. So what's going on here is that perhaps it can be best summarized not by referring to the Reuters article, but to an opinion piece that came out in the Washington Post on Sunday. And this has been a wildly popular article. It's in their website's most popular section now. In 2 days, it's gotten over 2,000 comments. It's created a lot of attention. And in it, a former Mormon, a person who left the LDS Church, the title of her opinion piece is "A Mormon Church in Need of Reform." And so she goes through and she lists all the problems she had with the church and why she left, and she felt that, you know, the church wouldn't allow for any critical thinking, and that people were, you know, claiming that she was satanic for dissenting from the church and disagreeing with things, and then she left. And
Well, Connor, I mean, I can't think of anybody more that generates more disagreement than perhaps you that's Mormon, right? Like, I don't know a lot of Mormons, but I do know you over the, you know, after the little while that I've known you, you're not afraid to have people disagree with you, and you're still Mormon.
Right. Well, and that you're getting at a point that I want to give a little more preparation to, and then I'll make that connecting point because it's a good one to make. So she lists all these grievances she has, and that she felt like, you know, her family just totally alienated her when she wouldn't, you know, toe the line and stay within the Mormon faith, and she felt totally rejected, and that the whole pro-family thing in the Mormon church is just a facade. That, you know, if you have any disobedience at all, they'll totally kick you out and you'll be disenfranchised. I mean, and to be sensitive to this, many people do go through this because there are many families who, like any other religion or no religion, have problems and are unkind and don't show love and compassion. This isn't a Mormon thing. This is a human thing.
Yeah, it's human across the board, right.
Right, right. So she can't, you know, claim that just because we say we're pro-family but we don't achieve that standard, or that there are some families who are not at that ideal, that therefore the church is totally fraudulent and the whole thing is a facade. The interesting thing about her opinion piece is that many of her concerns are valid, and I can sympathize with some of them, and I know many people who agree with her and have similar concerns and criticisms of the LDS Church. So it's not to say that her entire opinion piece is unwarranted. Here's the problem I have, and then I'll connect it over to politics. In her piece, as I mentioned, her title is "A Mormon Church in Need of Reform." She sees these problems, and she thinks that the institution of the LDS Church is to blame, that somehow there is this institutionalized, encouraged from the top down sense of, you know, alienating people. One interesting tidbit that you might find interesting is in the beginning of her article, she claimed that because Mormons disproportionately serve in the Utah legislature, that therefore we are hostile towards those who are not of our faith. She called it a, quote, distrust of outsiders, simply because Mormons are, that we in Utah tend to elect more Mormons. I find this ludicrous. I mean,
yeah,
it's like
she sounds almost like a conspiracy theorist, you know?
Well, and it's like saying that Congress, that Americans are sexist because Congress is comprised mostly of men. Like, to say that, you know, it's a bad cause and effect, she's not connecting the logic, and it's quite unfortunate, I think, that she has a valid criticism or observation, but then she makes these leaps and bounds. In titling her address as she does, she suggests that this is an institutional thing, that the church is encouraging people to act this way, and I take a differing approach. I think it's not, as I said, the title of this is, it's not you, it's me, that it's not the church, it's the members of the church, that if we are being hostile towards people like her, if we are alienating other people who might disagree on an intellectual point or an issue of doctrine, that's not a church thing. I mean, our church leaders are not at all saying that we should alienate such people or treat them hostily or that we shouldn't approach those questions with sincerity and the concerns that they have. I relate it to government this way, that many people feel that the government is some institution separate and apart from those who comprise it, that we can blame the government for what they're doing and blame Congress, when really it is us who have enabled, either directly or indirectly through apathy, this to happen. The
which is kind of what I was saying about responsibility.
That's exactly right. And you were making a good point earlier, tying liberty to responsibility, that we cannot shirk our responsibility to be engaged, to be aware, to be informed, to hold people accountable. We cannot shirk that responsibility and then say, oh, but, you know, our government isn't, you know, protecting our liberties, when it was our previous actions and our current actions that allowed that to happen.
Now, hold on just a second. I've actually got a caller. Michael,
sure,
in Ozarks actually wants to talk about exactly that issue, and then we'll get right back to it, but I want to bring him in real quick.
Yep.
Hold on. Michael, are you there?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I've just slid into some alter universe, though. This day has been kind of strange for me, and I'm not making the correlations that you're trying to make. I think maybe you're talking about ethics instead of responsibility, aren't you?
Well, no.
Maybe?
I mean, I think the point is this, and
in correlation to liberty and your freedom.
Your freedom. Listen, think of it. Wait, hold on, Michael. Listen, think of it this way in a nutshell, okay? When you were a teenager, let's say, and if you had a typical teenage life, you lived with your parents. You didn't have to pay a mortgage. You didn't have to pay health insurance. You didn't have to pay car insurance. You didn't have to pay for food, right? You had no responsibilities. However, however, you didn't have freedom. You couldn't come and go as you pleased. You couldn't invite whoever you wanted to come over. You couldn't run around in your underpants. But the second you got free of that, of your parents, then you had to pay rent. You had to pay for your food. That's the point that I'm making. Am I blowing your mind, Michael?
You're losing. No, that doesn't translate into a comprehensible, workable formula to freedom, actually.
For you, but I think, Connor, I could say that you see it.
Now what you...
Right,
you're
Connor?
You're correlating a lot of things together here, right? Like getting a job and working for your own money, rather than say you didn't have parents. Say
Michael, hold on. Do you even... How would you define responsibility? What does it mean to be responsible to you?
To me, it correlates with sovereignty in life. It's when you're responsible, you are able to...
And that idea of sovereignty, Michael, that idea of sovereignty, that somehow doesn't correlate to liberty? Sovereignty and liberty doesn't go together?
Certainly they do.
Okay, that's the point. Now, hey, I hate to do this, but I
had to introduce the right word there. You didn't say anything about sovereignty, okay? And somebody had to.
Hey,
so
Michael, I said, what does responsibility mean? What does responsibility mean? You said sovereignty. We're agreeing, so you're arguing for no reason.
Well, thanks for letting me introduce the correct word there, then.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Thanks for the lesson. Thank you. Have a great day. Okay, Connor, sorry for the interruption. Go ahead.
Well, you know, with specific reference to what I'm talking about, I don't know that sovereignty so much applies. I mean, certainly responsibility does. I have the responsibility to love others, even those with whom I disagree. I mean, these are basic Christian teachings, and they certainly are manifested in other religions or even just general ethics, as he said towards the beginning as well, that compassion and love and understanding, to the extent that this woman who used to be a member of the LDS faith and now left it is criticizing Mormons for not being compassionate and loving of those who disagree, her concerns are valid. And I think those are important things that we need to address, whether we're talking about Mormons and former Mormons or conservatives and libertarians, you know, or whatever, however you want to address this as opposing factions. I think the lesson here is that it's not an institutionalized, like the church, nor is the government, you know, these institutions are not ultimately responsible somehow independently of encouraging this behavior. There are underlying principles that, when violated, are causing these concerns and these criticisms.
Well, that's what I love about you and your philosophy, especially as a Mormon, and really saying, look, it's our responsibility to live this idea of agency, and hence your whole book and your philosophy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the onus is ultimately on us. We can't avoid the responsibility, put the blame on others, and say, you know, somehow it's been institutionalized, when clearly that isn't the case. That it is our responsibility, the duty is on us, I should say, to fulfill these things independently of what other people are doing. To try and pose blame, whether in the Mormon faith, on the church for our bad behavior, unchristian-like behavior, or to blame the government for somehow being responsible for the things that we have enabled or tacitly permitted by not, you know, vociferously opposing them and working to oust the people responsible or the people who have done it in Congress. Ultimately, this always comes back to us, and this is the problem I have with so many people criticizing the government, is they're kind of sidelined spectators, and I say, well, what are you doing about it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you have permitted this to happen. It's the whole argument of silence is consent.
I think. And everybody wants to armchair quarterback and complain, but not actually get their hands dirty. Come on back, guys. We got Connor Boyack. We're talking about the so-called decline of the Mormon Church. Reuters did an article. Come on back. Connor's addressing it. K-Talk, AM 630, the Boise, Utah. All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon, right in the middle of the Boyack Review. Connor, we're talking about this article that came out saying that, to put it in kind of more euphemistic terms, that Mormonism might have jumped the shark, that it is on the decline, it is seeing a denouement, it is on the downward path. So the thing that I do find compelling, at least about the Reuters article, I hadn't seen the article you were talking about, but the thing that I found compelling about the Reuters article is that this Marlon Jensen is the official historian, and this is the guy, I guess they actually have him on like tape recording saying that, yeah, that the church is concerned and does acknowledge that I don't know what you call it, retention numbers or whatever for membership, that they're down quite a bit.
Yeah, to be clear, I do not agree with the article's main thesis, right? The title of this article on Reuters is Mormonism Besieged by the Modern Age.
That's kind of rude.
As if it's, you know, some like mythical, anachronistic relic of a bygone era that
people like
become
Civil
more...
Yeah, like these Civil War reenactment guys.
Well, as people become more informed and intelligent, they'll come to, you know, the scales will fall off their eyes. Now, reasonable people can disagree. I mean, you're not Mormon. You know, people can disagree with our faith and the tenets of our theology. But I think it's inaccurate to claim that somehow all of a sudden there's this huge exodus from the church. What's going on in this article is that there was a class meeting at a university here in Utah where Elder Jensen, a church leader, was there, and he did comment on the fact that there seems to be an increasing number of people leaving the church for maybe mainly intellectual reasons, but other reasons as well, people who are grappling with historical issues or doctrinal issues that seem to conflict with science or reason, at least that is the perception. So there's no hard data behind this. This is just a general feeling. And I know people who, you know, they've had these issues for years. This by no means is no new thing that some new book came out or some new information that supposedly threatens Mormonism. It's just a trend that perhaps is accelerating, maybe not, but Reuters had no hard data behind it. All they were doing was quoting this tape recording that what I've seen from another report that was taken out of context because they pulled a couple excerpts from this tape recording. But there was additional stuff said that did, of course, not make the article. But what I want to talk about, not so much is the trend of whether people are not are or are not leaving the church, so much as the principle of what's going on. Many of the people who are leaving the church feel betrayed, that they have been kind of sold a bill of goods, that the church has been putting out some sort of, you know, sanitized version of history. And I frankly think that is not completely accurate. We see this, I think, in politics as well, when people are claiming that, you know, I lost my train of thought.
Here's the thing that I see that's interesting. As, again, like you said, I'm an outsider. I don't know. I mean, I'm sympathetic, especially insofar as what I've understood from you know, just being here and being around Mormons and actually learning about the teachings and the scripture, that, you know, this whole free agency thing is libertarian, and I find it compelling that, let's just say, for the argument's sake, that maybe numbers are down, okay? I don't know, but let's just say they are. It would But I think that it would be smart that these people who are going around spending all this money on this I'm a Mormon campaign, which personally is not convincing to me as a non-believer to convert. But what I do find interesting is that maybe they should wake up to the fact that, for example, both you and I are Ron Paul supporters, and that strong, strong support that there are in young people, which are, right, the future, and that like 19 to 29 year old market strongly believes in Ron Paul. Well, the message that Ron Paul is teaching is what you're trying to push in Latter-day Liberty, that this idea of free agency. Why not jump on that bandwagon? That would seem to me like a very smart strategy if this church wanted to bring people into the fold.
Yeah, and I can't speak again institutionally for how the money is being spent or diverted or why they think that campaign might be more effective than something else. I know that they do a lot of, you know, metrics-based testing to determine what's going to be most effective and how they want to show people that we're not these, you know, fundamentalists living out in, you know,
sure,
the wilderness, and that we are, you know, for lack of a better term, normal, that we are like other people. I clearly think there might be better campaigns, at least intellectually, as you mentioned, to kind of connect on the principle and help people understand that this is what we believe. But again, going back to the main thesis of what I'm talking about, that it's not you, it's me, I don't see it as the church's responsibility to advance that type of stuff. As you note, I wrote a book, Latter-day Liberty, which I'm attempting to do that on my own. I think the burden is on us as individuals. I think it's the same thing, you know, politically, that we shouldn't be waiting for these organizations or the government itself to be defending liberty. It's very much an individual. It's a responsibility, as you mentioned earlier.
So what you're arguing is that this woman, instead of sitting there complaining and whining, she should be trying to fight and try to be, hey, I am a Mormon, and guess what? I am inclusive, and I am addressing these issues, that kind of thing, right?
Well, and I know many people who share her concerns who do not leave the church, who perhaps have difficulties maybe with a specific doctrinal point, but who are in agreement with many others. Maybe they just want to remain culturally for family reasons. Maybe they just like the environment and the encouragement of living a Christian life. We're a diverse group for all the people who claim that, you know, we are not a diverse group. But there are many people who stay for different reasons. The predominant, you know, majority, of course, they are what are called true believing Mormons. They do believe the doctrine and they support it. But yeah, I think it's sad that she's left. It's even sadder that she has gone on a criticizing rampage of the church with which she once affiliated and feels the need to tear down what she previously supported. But you know, this is a trend that we're seeing, and I think it's misguided. I think that the people, to the extent that people are blaming others, they've missed the mark. And that's not to say that there doesn't lie, you know, that there isn't any blame in these institutions or in other people. There certainly is. But I just take everything always down individually, that it is not someone else's responsibility to correct this problem or persuade others and encourage them to see the problem and fix the problem. That's my job. That's our job. We should be educating. We should be persuading. To the extent that we observe and want to see corrected an error or even just something with which we generally disagree, I don't think that means we need to so caustically begin to criticize it without providing any remedy of a solution, or being, as you say, inclusive and saying, look, you know, you and I had a strong disagreement last week on Facebook about this bill that's going on. That doesn't mean we need to be so caustic
alienate one
another.
Both of us disagree with pretty much everybody, whether they're our friends or not. I mean, that's part of the deal. It doesn't say anything about the fact that I know what you're doing for liberty is like hardcore and I totally support you. But who on earth agrees with somebody else 100%? Nobody,
right.
Not even twins.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's a fair point. I mean, and that's a very political point, too, that even, you know, for example, Ron Paul, of whom I'm a big supporter, I completely disagree with him on immigration. I disagree with his, as I noted to you on Facebook, with the earmarks position that he takes. That doesn't mean that I don't see him as someone of good character who is moral and honest and who really understands liberty, even though his application of that in some cases might differ from my own. So with this woman in the Mormon faith, you know, even though she has was formerly a member of our church, even though she has her disagreements, I find it problematic that she would just jump ship and begin to try and, you know, torpedo the ship that she was on just moments ago, when clearly I think there's a better path and one that can help one another, even if it's only to achieve better understanding between a now diverse group of people that have a disagreement. If we can only have understanding and concern and compassion, because, you know, we're always going to have disagreements. I disagree with conservatives and certainly liberals quite often. And we have very heated discussions, but I don't see that to mean that I need to, you know, leave them all together and just, you know, separate myself completely. I know many of them are often angry or upset with me because I continue to challenge them and don't let up in a lot of ways, but I don't know that that means we need to alienate one another and consider people, you know, not worthy of our concern and affection. I just think that that's probably the wrong way to go about promoting whether it's Mormonism or Christianity or what have you, or even the cause of liberty, that we can't be so alienating of other people nor placing the blame on others when much of the blame lies with ourselves.
Yeah, it, you know, it's interesting because you raise a good point, and this is the thing that's so weird about liberty, but, you know, I think we can have disagreements as long as we just stick to the basic rules of debate. You know, don't use ad hominem attacks. Don't use straw man arguments. Just try your best. Because to me, I don't look at a debate or a conversation as a win-lose situation. I try to enter into every single conversation I have to walk away better for it and have the person I'm engaging with also walk away better for maybe a better understanding of whatever. But it's interesting because I know that, you know, for me, one of my biggest influences, I've got a lot of economic influences that happen to be libertarian, but probably one of my biggest influences with regards to the way I think about liberty is Thomas Sowers. And what's interesting is he is a hardcore atheist or whatever. I'm not even atheist. I'm agnostic. But and he is the one that really turned me onto this idea that liberty and responsibility are kind of the same thing. And I find it fascinating that, in fact, you've already got one best-selling book that's Latter-day Liberty. Your next book is actually going to be titled Latter-day Responsibility, if I'm not mistaken,
right? That's right, yep.
So what do you do when you have somebody like Michael in the Ozarks, and we've got Zach and Harriman holding, so hopefully, I hate to do that to you, but as succinctly as you can, how do you turn people onto that concept? Because I'm trying to do it in my own particular way, but, you know, you obviously coming from a different angle but arriving to the same conclusion, how do you turn people onto that idea?
I think a good way of doing it is to show the antithesis, right? You prove the thesis by showing its opposite. And by building up this example of what an irresponsible person is, I think people can clearly see that that person is not free. They are not independent. They are dependent, right? They rely on so many other people, whether it's for their food production or their financial support or their medical care or their education, what have you, that someone who's irresponsible and not taking care of themselves and providing a life for themselves and those under their stewardship, they are not, that is not the opposite of an independent person. So I think by showing that example, it's quite easy to then flip it and say, now think of someone during the founding generation, these people who were armed, prepared, you know, well-read, ready to go. These were the independents. These were those who fought for their independence. And they were the ones who were equipped and educated and prepared and ready at a moment's notice to then fight for that independence that they were already claiming, and we need to be more like them. We need to return to our roots, and, you know, this whole progressive, liberal, whatever we've now become society, we've so deviated from the mark that we are now in bondage. We are a dependent people, and the system is so fragile. I mean, it's ready at a moment's notice to just totally implode. And so pulling down people and really having them reclaim those responsibilities, I think, is one of the best ways for helping them not only to understand what their liberties are, but then be able and willing to fight for those liberties.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you 100%. We've actually got Zach and Harriman. Hey, Zach, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. First off, I just have to say, Connor, you're my hero. I really appreciate what you do and the fact that you're out there and you're an LDS man and everybody acts like Ron Paul's the devil because he wants to make drugs legal in their minds. But anyway, that's just out of the point. I actually had a...
Thank you.
You betcha. I had a discussion today with one of my patients. I do home care, and he is so like positive that I hate Israel because I love Ron Paul, and I don't love everything he does, but the ideas of liberty are agency, and if somebody tries to take away my agency, I see them as an evil person, maybe not intentionally, but that is an evil thing. And I wonder what your guys' point of view is. Like, I tried until I was blue in the face to tell him I don't hate Israel, I don't hate all these people, I don't want to hunker down and live in my little cave. I just want to be able to live my life without having somebody tell me what to do. Like, how can I more effectively express that, or do I just have to accept the fact that he's not going to allow me to have my views?
Now, Connor, I hate to do it, but you got less than a minute, and I'm
okay.
Going to give you the last word, so go.
I'll be quick. So earlier, Jake, you gave the example to the other caller about a parent and a teenager, and the teenager was not free, was irresponsible. I think it's the same way with something like Israel. Because we love and support Israel, we want them to be increasingly independent and free. If we continue to subsidize them, and if we continue to have them be our puppet government that we're kind of, you know, making their decisions for them, or at least approving decisions that they have to come to us first on, they are not free. They are dependent upon us. And I would say that we love and trust them less when we maintain and prop up this environment, this circumstance. If we really love and support Israel, we should be finding ways, I think, to help them reclaim or regain or even have for the first time ever their full independence, of which they're totally capable. Netanyahu said in Congress recently that they're capable. So we need to allow them to have their own independence, whether it's Israel we're talking about or other people as well. Regain their responsibilities, become independent.
All right, guys. Hey, I hope that helps. Tomorrow, thanks for that, Connor. Tomorrow we're going to have the...